folks. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 147. Those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps, pedals, and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.com. Sign up for email alerts, and you can know whenever a new episode's been released and other timely information, or if there's a video out that's what and whatnot. All right, let's get to it. Today I'm going to kind of get you guys all up to speed. If you're still subscribed and listening and paying attention and wondering, hey, you know, it's been a long time since we've heard from Lauren. Is he still around? And well, yeah, I am. So, yeah, the last episode we had was from June of last year when we, what was that? We had a nice interview with a guitar company. It was kind of cool, nice long episode, and we really enjoyed the conversation, but obviously we are 8 months away from that, 8 months removed from that episode. At this point, at the time of recording, it's mid-late February 2017. So just kind of give you up to speed on what's been going on. If you don't really care, maybe fast forward a couple minutes or so, or maybe even longer, or maybe just skip this one and go on to the next episode where I might talk about guitars and stuff. But kind of what's transpired in our in my world over the last 8 months. It's been kind of interesting. There's a lot of family things, and I guess early middle age now. I'm 45. Oh my gosh, that's a crazy thought for me, because there's so much of my time I still think I'm just some little kid. I'm not sure if this is still recording, if I'm getting... All right, I do have a signal still. All right, so I'll get to that in a minute, why I'm curious about being sure that I have the right signal and all. But yeah, my father-in-law passed away last summer, and dealing with things with, her side of the family has been a lot on our end. None of this is an excuse for not putting out a show, but I've been very busy with work and all the projects that have been going on. If you don't know, kind of my background is that I went to an art school here in Central Indiana. I went to Heron School of Art and got out. My goal was, when I went into graphic design, was I thought, I'm going to design album covers. And this is before CDs came out, and like 85, 86, right when the CDs were very first coming on the scene. And so they're a little bigger than like the cassettes, but not as big as like, your nice full LP cover that were, your epic covers from like Boston or Pink Floyd and, all your awesome albums of the 60s, 70s, early 80s. I was going to go into that, but I graduated college. This thing called the internet was somewhat in its toddler phase, or maybe it's awkward teen years, early teen years. Let's say that. The late 90s, I'd say the internet was in its awkward teen years. And then, whenever I graduated, I wanted to get into that, but I got into print, and I worked for several different print companies, working in publications or, screen printing or your tchotchkes, your little trinkets and stuff. I forget what they were called. I've tried to kind of forget my time in that industry, honestly. But I got out of that and got into more video. I enjoyed video in college, and I worked at another company that brought me on because of my experience with video and in college, and then my experience in print and logo development, brand standards, those sorts of things. And they started working with me on web development and working with web developers, database developers, and marketing until I basically wore a bunch of different hats, from your interactive web marketing, email marketing, branding, video, videography, storytelling, all those phases and stuff. And until I started going, you know what, I don't really want to focus on any, I've never really focused on any one of these for more than a couple of years at a time. And do I really want to specialize in any one of these? I really don't want to specialize in any one of these. And so I just bumped up the level a little bit on the mic. Maybe I just need to move the mic closer to me. Excuse me. I thought maybe there might be a little noise from the mic. So if there was, I apologize. So I decided that I wear all these different hats, and I consulted some of my coworkers and some folks that I trust outside, and said, I'm not really sure about where I'm really wanting to go with my career. And they said, you know what, Lauren, you should probably just look into being a project manager. And I was like, what in the world is that? They said, well, you know, you're on these projects that, you know, that it's like, oh, it's the guy that is sitting at the end of the table crossing off due dates and making sure everything is on task, on time, on budget, just getting updates and reporting up to the key stakeholders and so on and so forth, and all that project management jargon. And I thought, well, that seems kind of interesting. So I started watching those guys closer in the projects that I started getting into, bigger and bigger projects, and watching those guys and going, you know, that could be really something that I'm interested in. And so, and I started talking to those guys and telling them I might be wanting to maybe make a transition to that. And they said, yeah, that'd be great. You know, you've worn a lot of hats. You kind of understand a lot of different things, a lot of aspects of projects, and you have kind of the right temperament, the right personality for it. And yeah, it'd be a good idea. So I started down that path about 2009, 2010, and just started tracking my time and started looking at things from a project manager perspective, even if I wasn't the PM on the job or on the project, until I was running my own projects. I was still doing a lot of the work, but I was tracking the time, putting the timelines together, and communicating to the key stakeholders on the projects and so on and so forth. And until 2014, January, February of 2014, I joined another company where my actual title was project manager, and I was my, you know, I did still wear some hats about, you know, kind of, it's a small company, so helping fill in on whenever there's some slack or there's a gap actually in a skill set with certain people, or, you know, save some money instead of hiring out a vendor. You know, hey, I could do this, you know, let me, you know, it won't take me long, I'll knock this out, and it won't get into too much of what I was doing otherwise. Well, over the years, our company has grown, and it more has been on my shoulders as a project manager, and so some of those things have slowly gone away from my responsibilities, and that's been good for me and everybody, really. but the projects are getting bigger and more numerous, and so on and so forth. And excuse me. Well, I have been super busy with that. And by the time I get home, you know, I'm really, you know, dedicated to my family and not really thinking about sitting in front of a mic and setting it up and in the bedroom again, and or doing it on my phone. You know, I want better sound quality than what my phone would record or directly into my computer. I like it whenever I can plug in my halfway decent condenser mic into my halfway decent little soundboard and run that into my Mac, and like today I've got it set up, and so that you could have better audio quality. And so I was kind of lazy, Well, I'll just say it. I was lazy. And so working, you know, I'm sure some of you listening are going, you know, I work 60, 70, 80 hour work weeks, you know, and you are lazy. But whenever I'm working, you know, a 60 or 70 hour work week, it's coming home with me, you know, I'll come home from work and have dinner, spend some time with the kids and they go to bed, and then 8 o'clock to whatever time, and I'm maybe still working on stuff, or my mind is just gone and I'm mindlessly looking at the TV or dumb stuff on the internet. You know, I'm just spent. So that's kind of how things have been the last 8 months. But then I took on this thing called wanting to become PMP certification. You know, certified project management professional. And so I started on a class in September of last year, and it was a weekly class, but a lot of the time outside of the class was spent reading the material for the following week, preparing for a follow-up quiz, and making notes and stuff for that in preparation for those weekly quizzes. We'd have a home exam and then a quiz in class, and then at the end we had a final exam and evaluation and kind of next steps on what you needed to do to be prepared to take the exam to become PMP certified. And so we got through that in December, and I had some things I wanted to really get super confident so that I could, I felt like, you know, I could go in and take it and pass it right now. But I want to be one where I'm so solid with this, I know it, and I can't lose, you know, and going in. That's how I wanted to be. And so then, you know, the holidays came and went, and I was pretty much there. And I haven't scheduled yet. I'm going to pretty soon now. But anyway, just a lot of stuff with work has kind of kept me from making that jump. Also, another thing that has been going on is that, remember years ago, I said I was building my office in the basement, and it's a den or a man cave or whatever you want to call it, your music room. Mine really serves a lot of different purposes for me, but really wanted to set this up so that I could have an area, have a space to myself for you know, some office work, or if I have to take a client call from home, I can come down here and call in and have that call here without hearing, you know, the Wildcrats TV show in the background or my kids playing or laughing. I mean, I'm not ashamed of them or anything. It's just one of those things that, you know, if I'm on a conference call, I don't want, you know, I want it to be as quiet in the background as possible. And then now I have a space too where I can record these shows without any kind of background noise or whatnot. I can work on guitars or whatever else I'm going to do down here. So I have finally completed the project. It was coming up on Christmas break, and I took a week off between Christmas and New Year, and I said, I'm going to get all the materials to get this thing all done. You know, finish the walls, paint the walls, install the drop ceiling, install the lighting, install the doors, trim, carpet, finish it all up, and have it ready to be able to move in shortly after Christmas break. And so I got that goal done. It was shortly, I think it was like a week or so after Christmas break that I had the carpet down. And these are just peel and stick carpet squares, the 24 inch by 24 inch carpet squares I put down. So if something happens, I can just pull one up and replace it and so on. And I've got most everything moved in here. It's not all put away and organized real well. I have three, four, five boxes sitting on the floor, and a couple other things just kind of stacked in a corner that need to find homes. I need to put up some shelves and whatnot, that sort of thing. But I finally have this space, where, you know, I can come down and I can turn on, plug in, and start talking into the mic about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all that sort of thing. So, you know, my wife just took off with my kids to go to Girl Scouts and thought, man, I've got 2.5 hours, man. I could do something here. This is awesome. So, you know, hey, after the long, long gap in having an episode 147, I'm back. And I'm not going to tell you to trust me to say, oh yeah, he's going to have an episode every week or every month or whatever. But I'm saying that, you know, I don't really have an excuse now to come down here and talk into a mic for at least a half hour once a week. And, you know, I talk with, I've got a couple buddies I text with about guitars or amps and stuff we see on Craigslist or Reverb or eBay and whatnot, or silly things we see on the internet, funny memes and stuff, mainly regarding guitars or sports. So those kind of spark some things for me to want to talk to you guys about. But, you know, I just want to kind of get you up to speed with that. There's some other things that maybe a little more personal, but that my youngest, my 6-year-old daughter, she has started taking piano lessons. And I've always said, man, I want my kids to learn, you know, what I consider, and no offense to guitar players, because I'm very much pretty much exclusively a guitar player. I can't play piano, or I could play some, you know, I could figure out some chords on there and monkey around with it and it just do some stupid stuff that, whatever. But I'm primarily a guitar player, and I play a little mandolin. I want my girls to learn a respectable instrument like a piano or a violin or fiddle. You know, violin really transitions to fiddle if you want to play country. You know, my grandpa always said, somebody'd see his violin, his fiddle, and say, oh, Marvis, you have a violin. He's, no, I don't have a violin. I've got a fiddle. So, anyway, I'm pretty proud of my 6-year-old. She's not practicing a ton, but she still shows interest. She wants to play. She wants to go to her lessons. And her teacher says she's doing pretty well. And, you know, I just want to hear her play. I'm not going to harass her about practicing. I just say, hey, you know what? I'd love to hear you play. I don't have heard you play. Maybe you played while I was at work or when you got home from school, and I missed that. She would just like to hear you play for just a little bit, and then she'll play a little bit. But I don't, you know, I definitely don't want to go, now, honey, you should be practicing. You know, we're paying good money for these lessons. I don't care. You know, she's going to get some practice at lessons, and she's 6 for crying out loud. You know, 6. What do I, you know, she's going to get a lot just in that half hour with her teacher. And on that note, too, since I moved all my office furniture out of the front room, we have space in the front room to get a piano. Right now we have a little, it's not an 88 key. I don't know. It's not even a, what would it be, like a 72 key? I don't know what it would be. It's got maybe 4 octaves on it. It's good enough for her to learn stuff and still play right around that middle C. It's okay, but it's kind of in the entryway and in the way a little bit. And so a really good friend of mine said, hey, you know what? We've got a piano here in the house that nobody has taken interest in. And I mean, it was basically given to us. Why don't you use it? And I said, well, cool. We'll move it over. So now we have that area cleaned out and ready to go. And I'm going to, we're looking into piano movers who will move the piano, of course, and tune the piano, of course, once they move it. I mean, I'm not going to move the piano. I'm not going to do that, for crying out loud. My wife threw out on Facebook, she's like, anybody know any piano movers? And my brother-in-law says, Lauren, plus a couple buddies, and some other people chimed in. Yeah. No, I am not. I don't even want to guess how much a piano weighs. I'm not looking it up. I'm not doing any of that. I'm not. No, Lauren is not moving a piano. And so anyway, and what I've heard is that the cost of moving and tuning is not much more, you know, and not much of a difference. And hey, man, if I can avoid a potential dangerous situation, one, for maybe me or my buddies, and two, maybe for the piano itself or other items in my house, yeah, I'm going to do that, man. I'm going to pay the money for somebody to move my stinking piano. And so I'm looking forward to that, to getting the piano in there, and then she could play there, and it'll ring. I mean, you know, piano's just the sound carries. And here, I'm looking forward to hearing the sound of the piano carrying through the house, even though it's like, you know, single note melodies and little exercises. Ding, 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 you know, those sorts of things. So I'm looking forward to that. I just really want to get that over here. And my oldest, who is 9 years old, she took guitar lessons a year ago, and she got hit with the flu several different times. So she kind of learned some stuff, and she kind of enjoyed it and so on. But not, I mean, I think it was good for her, but it wasn't quite what it could have been, mainly because of her age and just circumstances. And now that my youngest is taking piano lessons at a place where they teach guitar lessons too, she's showed a little bit of interest, and she told me and my wife, she said, yeah, I'd like to take guitar lessons again. I said, well, you want to go back where you were before? And she said, no. I said, oh, you want to try someplace else? She goes, no, I want my dad to teach me. So that was kind of cool. I mean, yeah, she's 9 and I'm still kind of cool to her. I mean, she hasn't turned like 12, 13 when dad is not, absolutely not cool. But right now, that's pretty cool to me to hear, you know, hey, I want lessons from dad. So we talk a lot about guitars, and I tell her about different things that we haven't, you know, and she plays and stuff, and I help coach her a little bit. But that interest is there, which is cool. And what she's also shown interest in now in wanting to take lessons at the same place where her sister takes piano lessons. So I'm pretty excited about that. And of course, I got to share this story that last weekend I went to a favorite used guitar shop there in Plainfield, Indiana, and we're talking, and she's playing on a Stella guitar that's similar to her first guitar, which is now her younger sister's guitar. And she's showing how she wrote a song, and she's playing it for some of the guys there, the owner, and they're, you know, they're getting a kick out of some of the things she's saying and talking about the notes. This was cool. This was really cool to me. She goes, it starts with F, and she hits F. It's really F sharp, and but none of us said anything. And then she hit G, and then she hit open B with F sharp and made, you know, that 1/5 chord of the B, which is B, F sharp. And one of the guys said, oh yeah, F sharp. And she, B and F sharp at the same time. She goes, oh, is that F sharp? I said, yeah, the one further back, just one fret back is F. And she goes, oh, F, F sharp and G. And then she went to the fourth fret. She goes, is this G sharp? I'm like, boom, kapow, awesome. And she goes, I go, yeah. She goes, then what's this one? I said, well, it all starts over again. It's A. She goes, oh, A, A sharp, B. And then she did a whole step, and she went, is this C? She was trying to make that leap, and I said, well, actually, no. This is where it gets a little tricky. You know, no sharps or flats between B and C and E and F. And so she was, before these guys, these, you know, some of my buddies at the shop, they're like, she's learning the chromatic scale in front of them. And it's like all these eureka moments and things, and I'm a proud dad. Boy, it was awesome for me. So, I mean, these small things, man, as a dad, it's just, you know, watching her learn this stuff and hopefully it sticks, that was just really cool. So she goes and she puts the guitar back, and there's a guy sitting over there and talking about guitars, and he has a lot of guitars, and do you have a lot of guitars? My dad has a lot of guitars. A lot of guitars is relative to some people. You know, some people maybe say I would have a lot of guitars. There are others, no, I don't really have a lot of guitars. Anyway, the guy goes, "What's your dad's favorite guitar?" And I was like, what is she going to say? This is going to be really interesting to hear what she says. And she's thinking, he goes, "Well, what color is it?" And she goes, "Well, it's hard to say. It's black, and then it's kind of red, and then it's kind of brown. And is it called a blast?" "Oh, it's a sunburst. Oh, got it." So it's funny how a kid's mind works with that stuff. You know, that it's a blast. But yeah, "Oh yeah, it's a sunburst." She goes, "Yeah, it's a sunburst." And I'm thinking, oh, she's probably going to say my Les Paul, which would be a pretty good idea. My Les Paul is definitely one of my favorite guitars. And has been for years. If it's like down to the last one, and Les Paul's the last one to go, baby. And she goes, but I thought, well, maybe, well, let's just see what she says. She's gotten it down to those. That's kind of interesting. And she goes, "I don't know if it's a Gibson J45. And she goes, I have to say, she was leading up to that. And she was like, "I don't know. It's something like, it might be a Gibson J45. And the guy who's sitting there goes, "Well, you know, that's pretty specific." And I was kind of surprised that she one, remembered the name of the guitar as a J45. And that she, at this point in time, folks, that guitar really is my favorite guitar. I love its tone. I love its sound. Love the way it plays. Love its vibe. Now I got to tell you about that thing, too. I'm at a half hour. I thought, man, if I can get a half hour in, that'd be pretty good. Just kind of giving you guys an update. But, you know, I get to be a blabbermouth. So I'm just going to keep on going. So that was kind of interesting. And kind of guys kind of snickered a little bit about the whole being so specific. And I think they were all a little surprised that she said, you know, Gibson J45. And then we're on our way home. And we were talking about it a little bit. And I said, you know, I told her that I think they were a little surprised that she said that. And she goes, "Well, were you surprised?" I said, "Well, I wasn't sure what you were going to say. If it was going to be that or my Les Paul or just what, just interested. But I was a little surprised about how specific you were." I said, I think they were all very surprised at how specific you were. And I said, "But then again, I think they would have been even more surprised. I think they would probably have maybe even passed out if you would have said, yeah, it's a 1968 J45, a Gibson J45. And she's like, "Oh, well, yeah. And what happened in 1968? Oh, what happened in 1978? And, you know, kids can, she's kind of getting back into that phase of asking tons and tons and tons of questions. Of course, things are opening up in her mind and her world at 9 years old. So anyway, I got to tell you about that J45. Oh, my goodness. So, years ago, hold on just a moment. All right. Sorry about the pause there, folks. So, when was it? I want to say that it was like the summer of 2015. I was at my friend Mike Morris's guitar shop. Place I used to teach guitar lessons at, and he was starting to bring in some really pretty decent guitars and putting them in this back room, this side room, so to speak, that I affectionately called his private stock room. You know, it's kind of the reserved stuff, the special stuff. Didn't want anybody and everybody to go into and handle that stuff. His older stuff and really, some nice guitars and some vintage amps, and, you know, not super expensive vintage amps. You know, your little amps, but they were tube and they sounded cool and they were fun to play and that sort of thing. And I went in there and he had two Gibson J45s on the wall. One I want to say is a 1962, and the other one was a 68. The 62 was a Cherry Sunburst. The 68 is a three-tone. A three-tone Sunburst, and I played them both. I was looking at them, and they're pretty cool, and I liked them both, but they both have that adjustable bridge, that, you know, it was pretty big knock on the guitars. They started doing those in the mid-50s. And if you bought a new J45 now, it would not have that adjustable bridge. I mean, they kind of learned their lesson. I mean, this is before, you can't blame that on the Norlin years, folks. I mean, these are things, that's something they did before Norlin ever came into the picture. So, I mean, we're talking about the 50s and 60s, they had that adjustable bridge. So anyway, so I played them both, and I was playing the red one. I thought, man, this is kind of nice, and I kind of like it. And I told Mike about it, and Mike goes, "Yeah, it's all right. I think I kind of like that." But he goes, "I think I kind of like that 68 better." And so I picked it up, and I'm playing. I was like, "Oh, this is kind of nice." And I've probably talked about this before. When a guitar has some sort of mojo or magic to it, or I don't know what you want to call it, really. Mojo, it looks old. It has nice checkering on it, a little wear on it, some marks, some dings and stuff. But there are no cracks in this guitar at all. And so I call that some mojo. But this guitar has some sort of other thing going on with it, because I'm sitting there playing it, just play some chords and whatnot, and not really wanting to play a song or anything. And all of a sudden, this combination of chords come together, and the next thing you know, I'm playing a Neil Young song I'd never played before in my whole life and hadn't heard in maybe a decade. And I'm going, well, that's interesting. And then I get away from that, and I just kind of tooling around. The next thing you know, a couple chords, and I'm playing a Tom Petty song that I'd never played before in my entire life. And I'm like, hey, Mike, this guitar is kind of cool. What, you know, can you tell me about it? So it's one owner. You know, the receipt, I have the receipt when they bought it back in 68, and so on and so forth, no case. And it's like, well, did I mean it? Like, you play it much? And he's like, well, a little bit here and there. And I play some more, and I don't remember what artist the third one was, but just out of the blue, I'm playing this song I've never played before in my entire life. I'm going, this is really interesting. I like the tone of it, like the feel of it, like the look of it. So now I'm playing this stuff. It's pulling these songs out of me that I've often said before, that a guitar, it may not feel right, to you when you're playing it or whatever, but it may pull a different song out of you creatively through where you write a different song from it. Well, this was entirely different, because it was pulling songs that I'd heard out of me in a way that, you know, just hadn't happened before. And without me kind of trying or just playing it a long period of time, I was only sitting there playing this guitar for about 10, 15 minutes. And I was getting that from it. And I said, man, that's really something else. I told Mike about it. I said, Mike, this is really interesting. And don't want to show my cards too much about how much I like this guitar, but dude, I'm playing songs I never played before in this guitar. And he just laughs and goes, man, it's a nice guitar, man. You know, he's being all cool and you know, keeping his hand hidden. And so, you know, a week or so passes, and I go back and I play it again a little bit, look at it, and just talking with Mike, and man, I like this guitar. Well, then Mike closes down his store and goes to work full time, you know, your regular 8-to-5 kind of a job again. And I'm like, oh man, you close down the store, do you still have that guitar? And he says, yeah. And so he brings it to a guitar show, and it's sitting out there. And I'm like, oh man, I want that guitar pretty bad. I play a little bit. Oh man, I hate to see it. Hate to see somebody else get a hold of that guitar. But well, then I let that pass. It goes away. You know, I mean, he doesn't sell it. Luckily, I luck out. He hasn't sold the guitar, and then last spring, we're at the Indiana Guitar Show, and he has both of those J45s, that 62 and the 68, sitting up there on his table. And I'm like, oh man, Mike, this is nice. This is this this is cool. And it's talking to me, and oh man, what am I gonna do? So, no, just get away. You're not gonna get that guitar. You don't have the money right now. You're not gonna. Don't do it. And so then I step away, and I notice a guy come up, and he's talking to Mike. And Mike, this guy, and both of the guitars leave the room. Like, oh crap. I'm thinking this guy is coming in. He's wanting to check them both out, and he's probably got, you know, a wad of cash, and he's going to take them both. And he's going to realize that the 68 sounds better and has some sort of magic thing to it that he's going to like it better and take it. And I'm like, oh man, she's gone. That guitar is no, I don't have a chance with it anymore. And I'm talking to my buddy. I'm like, oh, that's it. Oh, well. And it comes back in. They both come back in. 68 goes back on a stand. The 62 goes in a case and leaves with this guy. I'm like, oh, man. Oh, that was close. Oh, gosh. What am I going to do? Without thinking, I go over and I talk to Mike. And I'm like, Mike, what just happened? I said, I can't risk it anymore, man. I got to have that guitar. I mean, whatever I got to do, whatever it takes and stuff, would you work with me on this? That, hey, we agree on this price, and when I get the money, you know, I want to buy that guitar from you. And so he agreed. He goes, man, I'll take it down right now. And we'll have, you know, our agreement. You know, handshake, I know you, you're cool, you're good, I know you're good for it. And so we shook hands, he took it down and put it in his case, and that was that. And I really appreciate Mike for doing that, because, I mean, I didn't have the cash on me. I didn't have the cash with me or even available. So, you know, a month or so went by, and I was like, man, I'm not quite there yet, but I understand that if you need to sell the guitar, you know, go do it. He goes, oh, no, I'm not in any hurry. And besides, that guitar should be yours. And I'm like, that is awesome. I was, you know, that was enough for me. So finally, I think it was mid, late summer, I had the money. And I got a hold of Mike, and I got the guitar, put fresh strings on it, and man, I'm digging it, I'm playing it, and not too much, because if you remember, I injured my left elbow, I got like tennis elbow. Oh, that's a whole nother story. I got to tell you about that too, but I'll get back to that. So I can't play a whole lot at this time, and because of the injury, and you know, I played a little bit, and my wife's like, don't play it too much. You're going to, you know, it's going to be painful for you. And so I set it aside, and my six-year-old comes out about bedtime. She's like, Dad, you got to play some guitar for us. And so I did, and I'm playing a little bit, and I see, you know, I'm not really thinking, and I'm only playing about 5 minutes or so. Because wife don't want my wife to get on me about playing guitar too much and, you know, injuring, you know, aggravating the injury of my elbow is trying to recover. And so I'm just playing. All of a sudden I play this A minor. I almost never play an A minor. Why am I playing an A minor? I'm like, dun, dun, dun. All of a sudden, wait a minute. That if I play this A minor in this kind of Spanish type of a way, like dun, 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 dun. Wait. A minor to F. And back at A minor. Excuse me. I'm playing a heart song, never played before in my life. And I start rocking this thing out. Never played this song ever before in my life. Ever. And I'm playing it, my kid's jumping around, dancing to the song, and I look at my wife and I just shake my head. I'm like, I've never played this song before in my life. And I mean, I grew up hearing this song. And another example of that guitar just talking to me, pulling something else out. And I figured out the dun 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 part in just a matter of moments. I'm playing that. I'm like, good grief, this guitar. And yeah, it's not going away. It's lumped right there with my Les Paul as the two last ones to go of any value. I've got guitars that are of no value to anybody else that, you know, I mean, anybody, you couldn't get $50 out of some of the guitars that I have, but heck, if you're walking out of here with them, you know what I mean? I mean, they mean much more to me. They hold such a large sentimental value to me that, you know, they won't go, but they're not worth much. It's just like my great grandpa, Hunt's guitar. I mean, I think it's from the '20s. And it's probably not worth much. I mean, if you walked into any Cracker Barrel or restaurant, you'll see one of them sitting up there with floppy strings on or with damage to it or whatever. And, I mean, they're more for decoration than anything. But, hey, it was my great-grandpa's. It was my grandpa's. And some of the first things I ever learned on that guitar. So you'll have a hard fight for me to get that guitar away from me. So even though it's not worth anything to anybody, no monetary value to it really. But yeah, those two are the ones that have any value. They're not going to go unless I can't feed my kids. So yeah, man. And, I'll have to do some videos of that guitar to kind of give you an idea what's happened with it. So, like I said, it had an adjustable bridge on it, and the bridge was made of rosewood. The bridge saddle, that is. The adjustable bridge saddle was made of rosewood. It wasn't like what you'd normally see a bone bridge saddle. So it still had good tone, but it was lacking that high end. And people say you're probably losing some of your tone to the gap with the screw posts that allow you to adjust the height of the bridge. And so I got with a friend, I talked with some friends about, you know, maybe I'll get some bone and work that down and replace it. And I talked with my friend Dave, who owns Six Strings Down in Plainfield, and he said, you know, you could do that. You could buy some and work on it, but why don't you just, there are guys around here that could do that for you. So I got to talking to some folks, and I went back to Mike and talked to him about it a little bit too. And he goes, hey, there's a guy here that lives just behind, you know, a couple blocks down from the old shop who does work out of his basement. And I'm thinking he's done that sort of thing before. He's replaced those adjustable bridges with a bone saddle. And his name's Joe Brock, and I got a hold of him, told him what I was dealing with. He goes, oh, yeah, I've done a bunch of those. And so I brought it to him, and he's like, yeah, I could totally do this. And his price was very reasonable. And what he wound up doing was, you know, taking all these measurements and drawings and things of the original saddle and taking the bone bridge stock and sandwiching it between two pieces of rosewood and then shaping it from there and put it right in the slot where the adjustable bridge went, took the bolts out. He didn't do the major undertaking of taking all the hardware out of the top of the body underneath the bridge. Like some people do, just why bother? Why bother doing it? I mean, that's major surgery and a big pain and a risk, and I'm not really willing to take or spend the money on somebody doing it. So we just took those bolts out and put that in there, and voila, we have the brightness. We have all the other, the mid-range punch, the low end, the projection, and that high end. And you know what I was starting to get a little worried about was, you know, what about is part of that magic gone because of losing the replacing that rosewood bridge saddle? And man, I don't know. Well, the next thing you know, I'm playing about a week or so ago, Dang, what was the song that just came? I have no idea what it was. But another one just popped out of the blue, out of nowhere. Well, no, guitar still got it. And then a couple nights ago, I'm sitting there talking to my wife, and I'm just strumming on it a little bit. And I'm going, this chord combination's pretty cool, and this rhythm's kind of cool. Really simple. You know, key of G. It was a G, C, D, and... No, it was a key of... It's in the key of C. Either G or C. One or the other. Because I think I play an A minor. I do play an A minor in it, so it's not D. And those are the only four chords really in it. Other than when I play a D, I might throw that low F sharp on the E string. Anyway, I'm playing this, and I'm like, this is kind of cool. And, I mean, I'm not really writing songs anymore or anything. I thought, man, I want to capture this. So I get my phone out, hit record, and start playing it. And I have no words for it or anything, but this kind of cool vocal melody, if I were as cool of a singer as Eddie Vedder or Neil Young or Springsteen, you know, I'd have something cool here, you know. And it's right in that vein of those three. If you blended those three singers together kind of in, you know, in their, I don't know, when they really had a lot of energy and fire and stuff, and that it's that kind of song. So that just came out. I was like, man, that's kind of cool, you know. And so I captured that. So I'm really, really glad I have this guitar. It's pretty cool for me. All right, I'm going to take just 2 seconds here. All right, I know a couple episodes ago, which is an eternity ago, that I talked about the elbow injury, and it's basically a torn tendon in my elbow. I call it tennis elbow because it's on the outside. It's usually caused if somebody's doing a backhand. You're supposed to keep your wrist straight doing a backhand, and a lot of people want to flex their wrist, and in doing that, that makes that tendon move, and that's or that muscle move, and it's not you shouldn't do that, and people then subsequently tear that tendon, and it is extremely painful. I mean, like really, really painful, and it's bad, but. And I didn't do it from playing guitar or anything like that. It was from exercising. And so I'd gone about a year of trying to let it heal itself or get the cortisone, steroidal cortisone injections. And that would work for a couple months and come back and a couple months and come back. And then it hurt again. And then they said that, you know, if you get more than two and it's still bad, we're going to have to operate. And it really... didn't want to go down that path, wanted to explore other options. So I started talking to a chiropractor about you know, avoiding that. And he gave me some, just a second, I'm coming up on something here. Sorry, I'm a little out of practice in recording and prepping for this. But anyway, where was I? I talked to the chiropractor and he had... you know, some ointment to put on there and some exercises to do and some things that he was talking about doing with it. And I was going to go down that path to try to avoid any kind of surgery. And I was probably about a month or so into that. And then I was at church and, you know, like outside of church time, it's like, you know, like a men's gathering or something. And a friend of mine who's a dentist in Brownsburg also plays guitar. Came up to me, he and his wife did, and he goes, hey man, I haven't seen you playing guitar at church in a long time. What's going on? I was like, man, I really like to, but you know, one, I've been busy, but the biggest thing is that I injured my left elbow. It's like a torn, it's like basically a tennis elbow. Gave him the story, and his wife just jumps right in between us and says, you need to see Dr. Silbert. He'll give this injection that well, take care of. She was talking about her neck injury and these all this. Like nobody wanted to. I mean, nobody could fix her. They all wanted to operate and stuff. And it's kind of like the Peyton Manning injury and maybe even worse. I don't remember what else was wrong there, but she said, basically he'll take a couple vials of your own blood, spin it down, and take the, I think what she had to do actually was get stem cells from her blood and inject it in there, and that basically it stimulates your body to heal itself. I was like, well, that's pretty awesome. But that injection can cost, you know, $3,000, $5,000, and it's not covered by insurance, and they don't accept insurance. It's all out of pocket. I was like, holy moly, good grief. So I put off talking to the guy, And then I went to his website, and he said it had a little bit about that, but talked more about platelet-rich plasma injections. And I was like, what's this all about? So it's the same process that they take your own blood and spin it down in a centrifuge, and they isolate the plasma and then inject it into the injured area in several different ways, and that it will stimulate your body to heal itself and that sort of thing. And so I went in and I brought in my x-rays and had a conversation with the doctor, and he said, you know what, I think you're pretty good candidate for PRP injection, and it's platelet-rich plasma injections, and told me about, you know, some professional athletes, namely Palomalu, who had it before a Super Bowl, like a month or so before a Super Bowl, and he's a professional athlete, and he's young, in his 20s, and, you know, yeah, well, I'm 45, it's probably not going to work as well for me, and I've been in pain for more than a year, and this is really a drag, and I'm really kind of down on myself about it. And so I went in, and I got the injection, and it was pretty painful for the day or so after, but you know, four weeks I was supposed to check in with him, and then 6 weeks in-office consultation to talk about where we were and what next steps would be, and to gauge, you know, how much better it was. And I'd say it was 50% at least, if I recall right, 50% better. He wanted at least that, you know, and I felt like, actually, I think it was probably about 70% better, and I was amazed. That's just great. Let's have the next one. And so I had another injection, and I wasn't, you know, coming up on that 4 weeks, I wasn't as optimistic. I was like, this isn't much better. It's a little better, but it's not much better. So we decided that I would come in and see him, and we could talk. By that time, 6 weeks had passed, and I was sitting there talking to him in his office, and I went, you know what? Honestly, we're probably about 90%. I mean, we're 90% of what it was. Like 100% is no pain, no nothing. You operate just as normal. And I was sitting there at 90%. I said, what can I do to make this? Is there anything? What are my next steps if we're not going to have another injection or whatever? And he goes, well, do these exercises. It's not much. And I just did them on my way to and from work. And, you know, it's getting better. And he said, you know, if you just want to kind of a finish off kind of an injection, you know, we can do that. And I'm talking, every injection that I got from him was less than $150 out of pocket. I mean, I can't really beat that. From what, and no surgery. I mean, I missed a day of work because I had to go in and get the injections, and then I was on pain medication, because, I mean, it hurts really, really bad afterwards if you don't have the medication. But man, I am easing back into playing guitar. I haven't had a second round of injections. I've thought about going back and just having another touch-up just to wrap it up. But honestly, right now, obviously, it's been 3 months since I had the injections, and I'm playing, and guitar playing isn't really affecting it. It's other stuff that really affects it, like moving all my stuff in here, the construction work I did on on finishing up my office and moving stuff in here and setting it up, that's really been the things that have aggravated it. So it'll ache a little bit, but I'd still say it's 95% of what it was before. So I can't really complain too much about that. Now, had this happened when in my 20s or 30s, I'd feeling like it'd be back, you know, way close to 100%, maybe even 100%. I don't know. But I'm not a doctor, and I'm not paid to tell you, you know, about this or make a recommendation. I'm just telling you my story and how I'm so glad that I didn't go and have the surgery or, you know, anything else. That this has worked, and I'm very pleased with that. Because, you know, honestly, once you have a surgery, there's nothing else you can do to repair it after that. If it's re-injured, you got to go back under the knife. And, you know, I don't really want to do that. I have not had a surgery in my adult life, and I'm really wanting to keep it that way. So anyway, that's where I'm with the elbow. That's the elbow update. So, wow, I've talked for almost an hour. I was thinking, hey man, if I can get a half hour in, you know, can kind of get you back up to speed on what's going on. So basically this episode is to get you up to speed on where I've been, what's been going on, and kind of strike that fire back up to produce some more episodes for you all. And I apologize for that long gap in episodes. And like I said, I'm not asking you to trust me to say that I'm going to have more episodes coming out right away. And that's not giving me an out necessarily. I really want to. I really think I should be putting out material. There are enough folks I know you like what I'm doing, and or enough of you that who do like what I'm doing. I want to keep putting out material for you, and I'm better understanding the kind of audience I have, the niche that I have of listeners, and I want to cater more towards you all. The questions I get, the comments I get, and, you know, who I'm hearing from, that, you know, better understanding that and taking care of you guys. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that related to guitar that I would love to talk about, and we'll talk about that sort of stuff, but I really want to focus on your needs. So, you know, email me with questions, comments, those sorts of things. I have some in the queue that I want to cover on my next couple episodes. But, you know, go ahead and start sending them in. And, you know, like I said, I've got the stuff set up here in the basement. I have no excuse that I, you know, not to sit down here for at least a half hour and talk into this mic. All right? So, anyway, you know, pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. And I hope that it, like I said, it's not a long gap between now and the next one for you. Email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes page or Facebook or whatever. If you liked what you heard today and you subscribe using iTunes or something other that lets you provide feedback, let them know by writing a review. You know, if you don't like it too, I mean, I know I've gotten some negative feedback on iTunes about the show, the audio quality or in the truck or whatever I'm talking about. And, you know, some folks, this is not their bag. And if it's not, that's fine. But if it is, you know, keep listening. Tell your friends who would like this sort of thing. Listen too. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt reminding you to trust your ear. Signing off for the Guitar Podcast.